Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.
We have an outsider, a political outsider, who initially, I think people said, nah, this guy doesn't have a shot. He's a political outsider, but he's a respected New Jersey businessman. And somebody recently released a new campaign ad about, you know, don't try to put me in a box. So this is Curtis Bashaw, New Jersey Republican candidate, a moderate Republican, pro-choice Republican in New Jersey here, and now slamming his opponent, saying that, you know, Kim, he's not going to secure the border. He's not going to keep New Jersey families safe. And so welcome in, Curtis Bashaw. Thank you so much for being here. You're getting tough here.
We are. We are trying to make the contrast, Dawn, and make sure people understand that there's a choice in every election for every office up and down the ticket. And our case is this. We've created over 1,000 jobs over 35 years in Cape May, restoring old hotels, growing our business. We've done that payroll by payroll every 2 weeks. We're a business person. Our opponent's only worked for the federal government his entire life, and he is a public servant, but he hasn't ever created a job or known the responsibility of what it is to sign the front side of a paycheck. So we believe that contrast between a business person and a bureaucrat is real. Secondly, we've been living under this Menendez corruption for 18 years. We are 49th out of 50 states in what we get back from the federal government. I don't like being second to last. But the time, people are ready for political outsiders, not insiders, who've only worked in the government. That's a contrast. And then you get to the issues of security and whatnot. You're correct. Andy Kim just this week voted against a bill that would deport illegal citizens who have a conviction in domestic violence or attacks on women. And so, you know, he voted against that. That's like the fifth or sixth border security bill that he's voted against. Yet that border security, we've learned from across our great state, is not a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. It's everybody's issue. We have almost 900,000 illegal people living in New Jersey, and it's not just making us feel insecure in our communities and our homes. It's costing us a fortune, billions of dollars, close to $2,000 per family. So these are common sense kitchen table issues that we think need to be solved by business people and political outsiders, not more of the same. You can't send the same party back to Washington and expect things to be different. So we're making the case across the state, and there are lots of people lining up to vote for us. Republicans are motivated. They're going to turn out. The enthusiasm in the Republican Party is at an all-time high, and so we expect huge support there. But we know that we can't do it just with Republicans alone, and that there's going to be Democratic friends and independent, unaffiliated voters who prefer, that understand we can't have four more years of the same, that understand that independent of their view about some national issues, that this Senate race, my race with Andy Kim, matters for New Jersey. And every New Jerseyan can decide who do they think is going to be the person that can go to Washington and actually bring people together to get things done. I'm that guy. My opponent is a member of the Progressive Caucus. He's on the far left side of his own party.
And I just want to make something clear, Curtis, that this is the Violence Against Women by Illegal Aliens Act. I'm reading from the actual, you know, from the legislature. It's H.R. 7909. If anybody wants to look this up, it was passed by the House of Representatives last week, which your opponent, Democrat Congressman Andy Kim. So how did he vote? Because I'm looking at this. I just want to clarify this. So we see 51 Democrats, who are lawmakers in the House, they voted along with Republicans. And you're saying Andy Kim, Congressman Andy Kim, voted how?
Voted no. He voted no.
So he voted...
He voted against the bill.
So he voted against something that would protect women who, in particular, who've been violated. This is the violence against women, specifically by illegals. And he voted...
Yes.
No.
Correct. That's what happened last week in our, you know, with Andy Kim's vote. And it's not the first time he's voted against these sorts of common sense border security measures. You know, we need to decouple border security from immigration policy. I think it's been politicized and blended in a way that's confusing. But I went to the border. I stood there and I watched. I was at an unfinished section of the wall outside of Yuma, Arizona. I watched from 12:30 to 3 in the morning, 60-some people walk into our country unfettered. It was as if they had TSA pre-check and were lining up for Space Mountain at Disney World. I mean, it was shocking to me to see it. But as I stood there, it's just common sense. Like, a country has a boundary. That's how you define yourself. That boundary is called a border. The border has ports of entry. Those need to be lockable. I lock the back door of my house and the front door when I go to sleep at night. If the doorbell rings, I open it. I say hi. If I invite them in, I invite them in. But maybe I'm going to say no, thank you. And so it's a common sense thing for a sovereign nation to have a secure border. It's not a Democrat or Republican thing. We shouldn't be at odds about this. This should just be immigration policy, on the other hand. How many people, from where, for what reason? We need to roll up our sleeves and have a bipartisan negotiation and solution. I happen to know firsthand the power of legal immigration. A third of my 1,000 employees are first or second generation Americans. They are a huge asset. They came legally. They stood in line. They waited their turn. They went through a process. They don't want illegal immigration. And I'm a big supporter of legal immigration, of a robust policy that works for our economy, that helps shore up, that pay taxes, and that contribute. So, these are some of the common sense things that we want to go to Washington and work on. You know, I'm going to put New Jersey first. I'm going to think about what's best for our state. And we're going to get stuff done in a way. My opponents voted 100% of the time with Biden and Harris. 100%. I can't imagine, just being a rubber stamp for anybody. You know, I'm Curtis Bashaw. I'm going to represent New Jersey. I'm going to put principle over politics. And make sure that we're doing the right thing at the right time for our state. And I'm going to be working in a bipartisan way to get these kinds of common sense things done.
Yeah, I think of just this week, we actually took a piece of it live with President Joe Biden as he was on. And it was history because he was the first president of the United States of America, sitting president, on live in studio. In such a way. So that was a first of its kind. And the ladies of The View on ABC asked him, you know, what he was most proud of in his career. And it strikes me that he talked about 30 years ago being a part of a movement and legislation that protected women from violence. I can't help. And that was the Violence Against Women Act. This in particular is an extension of it. It was sponsored by, you know, Nancy Mace. In the House there, it passed. And in essence, those 51 Democrats and the Republicans voting for this and essentially saying that if somebody comes into this country illegally, that they would be, and then they commit violence against women, that they would be deported or they would not, you know, be allowed. They would be deemed inadmissible to our country. It seems like a no-brainer. But what do you make of that, even as on one hand, you have President Joe Biden so proud of this legislation as really marquee, you know, something iconic in his entire long political politician career. And yet here's your opponent, Andy Kim, in Congress, voting against that.
Look, I think the far left wing has been putting these super progressive policies ahead of what's good for our country's own citizens. And people are awake now to the impacts of this woke ideology. And they don't want it. They want us to, they want to feel safe and secure. We had a triple header happen this week. It was amazing. We just got the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police for our campaign. That was on the heels of the State Troopers Fraternal Organization Association's endorsement week before last. And that was on the heels of the Police Benevolent Association. We have all three police unions in our state backing our campaign because we are for law and order, supporting our police and making sure we can't pursue our happiness as citizens. We can't live in domestic tranquility as citizens, these fundamental goals and values of our founding documents, unless we support our police, support law and order, and have a secure border. So these things are fundamental, and I think this is a big reason we're going to win this race this fall.
And as far as this Senate seat, I mean, it's obviously vacated by Menendez. Does that play into at all, you know, you as a political newcomer, an outsider, a businessman? Do you talk about Menendez much as far as replacing somebody who has, you know, been convicted and left amid, you know, the conviction of corruption?
Look, the stench of corruption has been wafting around New Jersey for many, many, many years under Bob Menendez. He beat it once. Second round of indictments, he didn't beat. And so, you know, he'll be punished for that. And that's a good thing for us to move on. Interestingly, you know, the choice for voters to replace him, you know, Andy Kim is really softer on so many issues than even Bob Menendez was. I mean, he may have been corrupt, but he supported Israel. Andy Kim doesn't. You know, he may have been corrupt, but he really worked hard to make sure that we supported our friends and allies around the world. So I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot of Democrats pulling for Curtis Bashaw for Senate because they know that this candidate, Andy Kim, is the most extreme far-left candidate that's ever run for Senate in New Jersey history.
Well, Curtis Bashaw, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me again this morning.
Well, it's great to be with you. I look forward to chatting again before Election Day. We're down to about, I think it's probably about 940 hours or so until the polls close on November 5th. So
oh
the
goodness.
Clock is ticking. And just remind everybody, it's Curtis Bashaw for Senate.com, F-O-R. If they want to join this mission and get involved and help us, we would appreciate that.
Appreciate you. Thank you, Curtis.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. You too, Curtis Bashaw. So I know it's South Jersey has and really known, I think, for, you know, his business acumen, as well as he is the one who really reformed and beautified the Congress Hall Hotel and runs that, as well as other hotels, business owner, and somebody who even I think the Murphy administration, you know, respected and had tapped at different levels. So a respected businessman. Certainly I would invite his opponent, Andy Kim, who's a congressman in New Jersey now running for Senate, would love to hear his answer to that and how he would explain the fact that he voted against this violence against women by illegals, that act that did pass at the end of the day. but it's something that I think a lot of people are scratching their heads over. So invite Andy Kim. Come on anytime. I know people say Andy Kim is he's a nice guy. He's held a lot of town halls. And so I would love to hear from people whether or not how they would match him up against Eva Menendez and Curtis Bashaw. My friends at Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're going to help you find that luxury vehicle you've been eyeing. You've earned it. Now go get it with a little help from my friends at Piazza. Oh, they have thousands of new and certified pre-owned vehicles from brands such as Mercedes-Benz, Land Rover, Jaguar, Maserati, BMW, Porsche, Alfa Romeo, and more. Just visit them, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com. Stop by one of their many dealers across Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey. Piazza, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, PremiumAutomobiles.com. Can't help but smile to myself when I see Volodymyr Zelensky's face. It's a little sourpuss on his face because he's like the kid at the principal's meeting, and I can't help but notice, you know, he's like a foot shorter than Trump standing there, and Trump's like, all right, it's all right. You know, that's the body language I get. So Dan Borowski, so good, the best. And he, you know, does the before and after. So Dan pulled the two of them as they're meeting, the before the meeting in the principal's office. You're called to the principal's office. Did he get a little spanking? I don't know if he got a spanking. He looks like it. And then the after. So Dan's got, you've got both of them, right, Dan?
Yeah, so first we'll go with the before. This is just before the meeting. Kind of sets the stage as to what to expect from the meeting. And take a listen.
Remember that he could have played cute, and he didn't play cute. And so I appreciated that. So we have a very good relationship. And I also have a very good relationship, as you know, with President Putin. And I think if we win, I think we're going to get it resolved very quickly. I really think we're going to get it resolved.
I hope we have more good relations.
We're going to have. Oh, I see. Yeah. But, you know, it takes two to tango, you know. And
I think we have good relations. You're going into the principal's office.
We have better relations than you.
I know. It's just, I'm sorry. I should, you know, I'm respectful, but come on. Look at the body language there, Dan.
Oh, yeah. You can tell.
Little's.
The look on his face is like, yeah.
Little Zelensky. He's like, looking up at him. Oh, Mr. He's like the principal going into the principal's office. That's just my take on it. So you've got the after the meeting. They met this morning. So let's look at now the after.
And he wants it to end as quickly as possible. He wants a fair transaction to take place. And I think, right now I'm campaigning. So right now I don't have much to do with it other than we're doing very well in terms of the campaign. And I've been saying that I believe if I win, we're going to have a very fair and I think actually rather rapid deal. It should stop. And the president wants it to stop. And I'm sure President Putin wants it to stop. And that's a good combination.
So you think about what he's saying. And on a very serious note, and we've talked about the death toll here and the casualties between both Russia and Ukraine. And that's what Trump is good at. He's looking at this, and he's the peace and prosperity guy. And he's looking to both sides and saying, really? You've got a million people. Casualties and deaths between the two of you. 1 million people. That's a city. These are fathers who are never, and sons and brothers who are never coming home. And he's saying, stop. Look at this. 1 million. And think about then translate that to all the lives and all the families and all the generations. 1 million. And he's saying, stop it today. Stop this death and destruction, and let's restore the peace and prosperity. That's what, and maybe you think, oh no, we want to fight. We want to continue to fight. Why? What does tomorrow bring, or what's really going to happen here? And that's what Trump is known for. And so, no, is Zelensky happy about that? Nobody's happy, but Trump is the one. And I, you know, as much as people want to say, oh, he goes on Twitter, or he goes on social media. He's the one who is the adult in the room, if you will, who's saying we have 1 million casualties. And when I say the casualties, not just the deaths, but the casualties, people who, if they survived this, these men and young men and fathers of all different ages, right, and grandfathers, these individuals, some of them will never walk again, etc. And so you're talking about serious casualties. He's saying, let's stop this. Let's restore the peace and prosperity. And Zelensky nodding with him. Just absorb that for a moment before you say, well, he's silly. He says inappropriate things on X because he, you know, whatever, whatever. When the chips are down and it's important, think about what he just did. Just take that in for a moment. And Putin watches that, and you've got both of them nodding their heads. We have the power. This is the power of America and of an American leader and president to say stop, restore the peace, and bring forth prosperity in this world. That is what Donald J. Trump offers, not just to our nation, but to the world. Are you against that? So the documentary is Selling Sex. And I'm joined now by Daily Wire producer Claire Carson. This is something that I think, especially as a parent of teenagers, this is important to me. It should be important to you. And the influence of what's happening, we talk a lot about the indoctrination of our children in school, but what about social media? What about what's on their phone and you don't know what they're seeing? And that's why this is riveting. It's must-see and debuting soon. It's my honor to welcome in Claire Carson, Daily Wire producer of Selling Sex. Hey, Claire. Or Daily Hi, Caller, Dawn. I'm sorry. Daily Caller. Excuse me.
No, it happens to everyone. Don't worry about it. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan, for saving me there. We have so much breaking news today. And so sometimes we like to break away, Claire, from, you know, all the breaking, local, national. There's so much happening. And just to put a spotlight on something that you've put your heart and soul into, Claire Carson at the Daily Caller, producing Selling Sex. Tell us about it. First of all, how did you, your process, what inspired you to put this together?
So I am, I'm 22 years old, just graduated college. The other filmmakers that I worked with during the project were 23, 24 and 26 respectively. So it's something that had kind of been on our minds growing up. Cause obviously, I mean, in so many headlines that are being written by older people, it's like, what's going on with this generation in porn? So many people are, you know, watching it and having these negative side effects. And my fellow documentarians and I were like living it. These were people that we grew up with, friends that we had that had serious pornography problems, people that had been exposed, you know, as early as 8 or 9. You know, some of us have brothers and saw it in them. So it's kind of something that all four of us grew up with and I think had been on our minds and weighing on our hearts for a while. And so when we pitched the doc to the higher-ups at the Caller, I think that passion came through and it got picked up.
So let's listen. Dan has a little bit of a trailer so we can get a taste of this.
The data tells us it produces more financial income than the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL all combined.
One night, you know, we just posted like two pictures, came back to it, and there was literally like $8,000 in there.
I get an email from the school saying your kids are expelled immediately, like they cannot come back anymore.
Someone was using a drone to drop notes onto my balcony of my penthouse. I mean, I've had people want to pay me like $30,000 for one of my teeth.
If the most intense hour of your day is looking at pornography, are you going to be changed by all these studies that say it's bad for you?
It feels like a colossal enough of a problem that everyone would be talking about it.
Every roommate that I had, with the exception of one person, had either taken their own life or died of overdose.
And so this is Selling Sex, Claire Carson. It's really about mainstreaming or normalizing porn, right? And the way, because we now have social media, we have the internet, everybody has that available right on their phone. And the people viewing it, you know, it used to be back way back in the day, maybe somebody was sneaking their like dad's magazine that, you know, nowadays it's accessible. And the people viewing it, especially boys, but I think also girls, it's getting younger and younger that they can have access to that and then the impact of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I keep coming back to, one of the quotes that did not make it into the trailer, but is in the doc, from a recovering porn addict and now life coach, Noah Church, based on the West Coast. He said that part of the problem is that now that it is more mainstream, pornography is getting more transgressive, and you're not going to, you know, see videos that are, you know, loving couple has a glass of wine and, you know, has an intimate night together. It's violent and it's transgressive, and that's rubbing off on children, unfortunately. It's one of the biggest problems with this switch in this oversaturated market is that it has to escalate itself to these unparalleled places.
And so when you think about the ages dropping and getting younger and younger, some of the research saying that some of the people consuming this pornography, some of it, as you're saying, might be violent, but as young as 8 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some experts, obviously there's a little bit of a discrepancy mm-hmm. in the research, but usually 8 to 12 is when people are reporting first encounters on average. 12 is kind of the accepted number that a lot of researchers have found in the last couple of years, but there are signs that are pointing to that number dropping.
And so when you think about this, as far as this Selling Sex documentary for, let's say it's an 8-year-old, or let's say it's a 12-year-old, or a kid somewhere in between, that's basically their first sexual experience, if you will. And then what impact does that have on them moving forward in their lives? What are you finding?
Well, it, you know, takes something that's supposed to be, you know, a first kiss that, you know, a kid dreams of until they get it, you know, they're 14, 15. It takes that first sexual experience and turns it into something completely removed from them, with two or three or four adults that they will never meet who are often in violent circumstances, and it normalizes that. You know, you take intimacy out of context and show it to a child who's going to mirror that behavior, and it has horrible social consequences. And we're seeing a rise in sexual aggression in young men, and a rise in thinking that sexual aggression is normal or even attractive in young women. And it's really heartbreaking.
And so it affects what I hear you saying, and part of this, and this is, by the way, we're talking about Selling Sex. This is a 50-minute documentary. And so when you look at this documentary, the impact, it's different, I would imagine, on depending on the age of the consumer, the age, and the gender. And so what did you discover? Because I think people would be shocked as far as views by girls and views by boys.
So it's actually, it's a lot more equal than you would assume. You know, at this point, you know, the internet is available to everyone, regardless of their gender. And, you know, we often think about pubescent boys being the only ones that are into this sort of thing. But if it's right in front of them, girls are too. And there's staggering amounts of, you know, middle school and high schoolers that would report either that they use porn frequently or that they would call themselves a porn addict. And that's, you know, across both genders.
And so for this, you know, one of the lines is that, and I was even surprised, as like, again, a parent of teenagers, teenage boys, is that they said, well, you know, some people do want to do this because you can make so much money on these different sites and the OnlyFans sites and that sort of thing. Is that shocking as well, that people say, well, what do you, you know, you think about when you were a kid, when people say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up? For me, it was, as an 8-year-old girl, I wanted to be a journalist. That was something I aspired
nice.
To be.
It worked out.
but then I did, right? So that kind of scares me when I look at people saying, oh yeah, I want to make, you know, whatever, $8,000 a pop on with my OnlyFans site or an influencer in this arena.
Yeah. We had a fantastic interview with actually an Australian woman who came to DC to sit with us, and Victoria Sinise. She made a great point that, you know, little girls used to want to be movie stars or pop singers because they would see, you know, Julia Roberts or Madonna having the availability to travel and having the money to travel, and they'd look happy and their pictures were posted everywhere on all the magazines. But now they're seeing that you know, younger women can travel and look happy and have their pictures everywhere if they're doing OnlyFans. And it's so similar to, you know, what pop stars and movie stars used to be. It's just in a different format. And, you know, young women are starting to notice that.
Thankfully. Well, Selling Sex, I know it premieres October 4th. And tell me where it's available. It's exclusive as far as subscribers. Do you have to subscribe for the Daily Caller?
Yes. Yes, you do. First month is $1, and it is available right now. If you go to any of our social media sites, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you can find links to it there. And our reels, the website itself is hsellingsex.dailycaller.com, and it will be a Daily Caller exclusive. You're right.
Claire Carson, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you hope we continue the conversation. This is important work you're doing. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Daily Caller. And it's really revealing this underbelly, if you will, of, you know, the dark side of the porn industry. I'll tell you more about a personal situation that happened to somebody I went to high school with. I have to take a quick break, but I do want to bring this full circle to somebody I knew who ended up in this world. It's a tragic story, but I think for me, it's personal. Colleen Applegate, her stage name became Shauna Grant. She was a good girl from a huge Catholic family.
Should I Google it?
She was. You can Google it because you'll see.
I'll throw my phone without the work Wi-Fi. How about that?
So, and her life was fictionalized in movies. 60 Minutes did exposés on her life and what happened to her. Some people swear she was a murder victim at the time they ruled her death a suicide. TV, one of the movies was, you know, Death of a Porn Queen. There was another one, Death of Innocence. She was the sweetest, most innocent girl and got swept up into that whole porn industry. And it was a tragedy, just a tragedy. Ran away from her small town in Minnesota and became like a porn star. But to have this, it was a horrific situation where some said she was like a sex slave. But her name was Shauna Grant. That was her stage name. You can look her up. She was a beautiful human being who was one of the first people who was kind to the new girl, much younger, you know, in school. And so she was, in my view, she was a murder victim. Mm. It's a tragic story. This whole world, this porn world, if you think, oh, it should be legalized and this and that. No, it's a horrific world, I promise you. And
beautiful
it's,
woman.
I know.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Just a sweetheart.
Wow.
And so, when I hear about people, you know, like our last guest who is just trying to expose this and especially at least make sure that it's not something that your kids underage or, my God, 8 years old. That was some of the research that Dan had given me. Kids as young as 8 looking at this stuff, and then it involves violence and all of that. No, it's never good. So Colleen Applegate in heaven, she was just a real angel on earth and a sweetheart. Everybody loved her at school, and it was a shock. And I know that her family still grieves over her death there in Little Farmington, Minnesota. But a sweet girl just caught up in the swirl of that evil, dark world. Now to think about it, I know. Ugh. I know, Dan. Yeah. I'm sorry to end. I don't want to end on a dark note.
It's crazy, though. And I got a documentary to watch now, too.
Yeah, so we have to watch for October 4th for this latest
one.
To watch it.
And the one on Shauna Grant, yeah.
My gosh. Have we had a dull moment?
It's been a quick show.
My goodness. Yeah. Love working with you. I'm grateful that you've agreed to helm this show. I'm so excited. My family members are like, we love Dan.
Oh, well, thank you, family. Not my family. Thank you, dog's family.
And what a week this week. And then this weekend, I know I'm going to try to make it out with my friend Hope, and she'll be out this weekend. I know that Lindsey Graham is going to be in town, others. So it's a big weekend
with the
campaign. So that's going on Sunday. So I'll try to get to some of these events.
I didn't ask for this.
It's a little taste of the South coming here right to Philadelphia.
See, you're going to have right? some of the grand.
And I know that we have the Dom show coming up. He has some great guests. But my goodness, with Trump and we have J.D. Vance coming to Pennsylvania. We have these two major congressional investigations that are barreling down, asking a lot of questions about what was going on with, you know, Zelensky here in Pennsylvania. So much happening. Trump on the campaign trail. He'll be in Michigan later, right? So he travels from New York City, where he was meeting with Zelensky earlier, as well as others. Then Trump heads to Michigan. And then we have the Vice President of the United States of America, Kamala Harris, trying to do some damage control as she is headed to Arizona to the border. And we'll see what happens. And I'm always anxious to see this. Will at least local reporters do their due diligence, shout out a question, as CBS is reporting that she'll try to reinvent herself and call for border security? How does that play in the news media that she is the current vice president?
Well, call for border security, right? After, yeah, you are sitting in office, right, Kamala?
Insult. Incredible. I hope you have a beautiful Friday, a beautiful weekend, and we're saying prayers for everybody caught up in hurricane, now tropical storm Helene, the Dom show, and then Zioli was getting a lot of love, as well as Dom.
Kale learned anything from Bruno? Is Bruno doing okay down there?
That's what I have not heard from him.
All right, well, let's say some prayers for Tony Bruno.
Yes, you know, and Miss Robin, and they're yeah, trying to build
right,
a home
right
down there.
I think, yeah.
My goodness. Have a great Friday. Have a blessed Friday. Thanks for being here.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.